WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Former President Jimmy Carter is one of the most sought-after mediators in the world. In Haiti, he negotiated an agreement with the military rulers that averted a U.S. invasion. In North Korea, Carter helped defuse a nuclear crisis by getting assurances from leader Kim Il-sung that he would freeze their nuclear program and allow international inspections. More recently, Carter negotiated a ceasefire in Bosnia. His efforts have won much praise, but he's also been criticized for cutting favorable deals with dictators. Is he a stooge or a savior? Asked one Newsweek headline. In the first half of today's archive edition, Jimmy Carter talks about his role as a mediator. Then in the second half of the show, he reads from his best-selling book of poems, Always a Reckoning. Carter says that he gets calls almost every month asking him to mediate conflicts. Last January, I asked what criteria he uses when deciding if he's going to accept an invitation.
Well, the first thing is that we have to be able to induce both sides to accept our presence. Usually we get a request or an importunity from one side, and then we go to the other side and say, are you willing now for us to participate? Do you really want to resolve this problem in a peaceful way instead of through continued war or the eruption of war? That's the first step. The second step is to get permission or approval from my own government, either from the State Department or the White House. And in most cases, we are better able to get approval from the White House because the State Department is an enormous bureaucracy, and there is at least an insinuation in their mind that if some outsider comes in to address a problem, that it means that they have failed in their duties. So in most cases that have been highly publicized recently, we've had approval from President Clinton and some of his subordinates, but some opposition from other places within the government.
How often has the president turned you down when you've requested the opportunity to mediate?
Well, it's not only this president, but others as well. For instance, in the case of North Korea, we were asked for 3 years by then-President Kim Il-sung to come to Pyongyang to listen to their position and to try to resolve the increasingly challenging differences between North Korea and the United States. And when we asked for permission to go, or approval, from the administration, both under President Bush and President Clinton, they said no, that it was not an appropriate time or it was too sensitive an issue for us to handle. 3 years before we went, also in Haiti, when President Aristide was forced out of office by the transitional government, later headed by President Emile Jonassant and by General Cedras, both the expelled President Aristide and the provisional government leaders who remained in Haiti asked the Carter Center to perform the services of a mediator. But for 3 years, both our own government and the United Nations said that our services were not needed. So we didn't go in either case in North Korea or in Haiti until the crisis erupted and war was imminent. In the case of Bosnia, we were asked to go to Bosnia by the Serb leaders who wanted permission to send a delegation down the plains to my home to talk to me. There I called President Clinton, told him about this request. He approved it. They came to my home, explained what they would do if I would come to Bosnia and listen to their side, and I again got permission from the White House to go.
Now, what did the Bosnian Serbs say to you that made you take them seriously? I'm asking this in the context of knowing that Karadzic has basically reneged on nearly every agreement that he's made.
Well, he said that if I would come, he was prepared to open up relief convoys, deliveries. He was willing to open up the airport in Sarajevo. He was willing to exchange prisoners of war. And he pledged to honor human rights. And so I relayed this information, as I said, to the White House and also to the State Department. And I told him that I would only come if he demonstrated tangibly that these things were being done. And I didn't go into Bosnia until all these things were put into effect. And then I went both to Zagreb in Croatia to meet with President Tudjman and also to meet with President Izetbegovic and his associates in the Bosnian government before I went to Pale to meet with the Bosnian Serbs.
When you know that someone who you're about to negotiate with has violated all the promises they made in the past, how does that affect the way you handle the negotiations and the way you handle a promise that they're ready to make or a treaty that they're ready to offer?
Well, quite often we find that both sides violate agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And that the media coverage in our country is quite biased. We tend to have heroes and villains, and the heroes can do no wrong and the villains can do no right. What we do at the Carter Center is analyze all the world's conflicts. There are about 32 major wars now, and we try to learn on a sustained basis the causes of those conflicts, the people involved, the issues that must be addressed, and so forth. And almost invariably, these wars are civil wars within a country. And except on rare occasions where the United Nations Security Council has actually acted, it's not proper at all for a UN official even to talk to a revolutionary who's trying to overthrow a government that's a member of the United Nations. So we go where others don't want to go. And at the time we went to North Korea, there was actually a law in effect that prevented any American from going to Pyongyang to talk to the officials there. And as you know, we were on the verge of a mass invasion of Haiti when we went down to Haiti. So we try to keep an open mind, not condoning what has been done in the past, but setting up the procedure so that at the end of the mediation process, both sides win. If one side wins and the other side loses, then there's no way that an agreement can be preserved.
When you went to negotiate in Bosnia, Leon Panetta, the White House chief of staff, put it like this. He said, "The Serb motives are suspect." And I'm certain many people agreed with him when he said that. You know, a lot of skeptics say that tyrants ask you to come because they think they'll get a better deal out of you. So what do you say to that?
Well, I don't have any deals to offer. And I never go without the approval of my government. And I never deviate from the policies of my government. And I'm not only very familiar with the reasons and background and personalities involved in conflicts, but I'm also very careful that I'm thoroughly familiar with my own nation's policy before I go into an arena of this kind. I've never deviated from that. Also, I don't want any authority. I have zero authority. I just go as a private citizen, as a professor at Emory University, as a member of the Carter Center. And this is very important to me. When I conclude any sort of agreement, it has to be approved word by word with the authorities in charge, both sides to a dispute, or in this particular case, by the United Nations representatives there, and also by my government.
Are there things that you can do as a mediator that a president or his staff cannot?
Sure.
What?
Well, there's a severe restraint on me when I was president and others of diplomatic niceties. And it's not appropriate for, even for the U.S. ambassador in Port-au-Prince to communicate by an exchange note with the provisional government leaders in Haiti when President Aristide was in exile. So that's when I can go in and without any restraint on me, official restraint as a private citizen, I can talk to these people, listen to them, and deal with them. The final conclusion of the agreement in Haiti was not worked out with General Cedras. It was worked out with the foreign minister, whose name was David, and also with Emil Jonassin. And their actions quite often were contrary to what the military wanted. But the point is that as I said earlier, in these civil wars, our government can only deal with the official government. And the official government in Haiti was President Aristide. And in Korea, the official government was the one in Seoul. And now, of course, things are changing. We've now recognized North Korea as a separate legitimate entity, partially as a result of my trip there. And we're opening up interest sections, and I hope we'll soon have normal trade and commerce and even full ambassadors exchange.
If you were able to turn back the clock and have the knowledge and the experience as an international mediator that you have now, would you have handled the hostage negotiations with Iran any differently?
No, I tried. You know, through every possible means, official and unofficial means, I tried to negotiate with or to communicate with the Ayatollah Khomeini. But he issued orders as in his autocratic way that no Iranian was authorized to speak to anyone who represented the U.S. government in the hostage thing. So we tried to get all kinds of people to open up some sort of discussion with the Iranian officials to get our hostages out, and it was fruitless until the last few days of my presidency. The last 3 days that I was president, I never went to bed at all. I never even went over to the White House. I stayed in the Oval Office to negotiate with the Iranians indirectly through the Algerians, and it was that negotiation that finally brought about the release of the hostages. From 10 o'clock that morning until noon when I went out of office, they sat in an airplane at the end of the runway in Tehran Airport. And as soon as President Reagan was sworn in, the plane took off. But that was a result of a last-minute negotiations through the Algerians.
Jimmy Carter recorded in January. This is Fresh Air.